On the property tax front, one of the local state issues is whether local property tax, local governments can raise property taxes without checking with their voters. There's been an effort at the state level to limit their ability to do that. Last session, the House said if you raise your local property taxes by more than 6%, you ought to have to go to voters for permission. The Senate said, let's make it 4%. The governor said, let's make it 2.5%. And then the breakfast broke up and they stopped talking. So they didn't get the legislation last time. They're going to be back again this time. The governor mentioned it in his inauguration speech on Tuesday and said, you know, we need to come back to this. We need to limit growth in local taxes. And he added a couple of things that you're going to see as this session goes out. He said, we also ought to give voters the ability to fire chief appraisers so that when you're doing property taxes and you don't like it, you can put together a, you know, letter-writing campaign and go after the chief appraiser. And he also said, you know, in the past, the cities and counties have said, if you're going to limit our ability to raise taxes, stop sending us unfunded mandates. The governor said in his speech for the first time the other day, we should get rid of unfunded state mandates. It's a great applause line. It's a hugely expensive endeavor. I was looking at some numbers yesterday from the Texas Conference of Urban Counties. They spend about $250 million every year on indigent defense, which is required by the state. And of that $250 million, the state reimburses them $37 million. So if you say, I want to get rid of unfunded mandates, right there, the state has to come up with something on the order of $200 million. It's not the biggest one. The biggest one is jails. If you require local officials to hold prisoners in local jails for 45 days on state crimes, and if those prisoners cost $55 to $90 a day while they're in those jails, you basically told those local authorities, you're going to pick up this bill for the state. If you say, I'm going to get rid of unfunded mandates, the state has to start paying for that jail time. Again, it's a really, really expensive proposition. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out. And then the last thing I'll say in the political atmosphere is we just finished an election and the next one already started. I don't know if you noticed, we already have from Texas 1.5 presidential candidates. We have one who declared, Julian Castro, the former mayor of San Antonio, the former housing and urban development secretary in the Obama administration. He announced, and then he went to Puerto Rico, and then he went to New Hampshire, and I think he's on his way to Iowa. So he's definitely in the race. So there's your one candidate. Beto O'Rourke is alone in a car traveling across Kansas, writing pieces in Medium. Do you know this on the internet? He's been writing these. It's something between, it's like I told somebody the other day, it's like the love child of Jack Kerouac and Jimmy Carter. You know, he's writing these on-the-road pieces, and, you know, I'm kind of in a funk, and I'm a little bit stuck, and it's just, you know, existential writings from a presidential candidate. It's really sort of interesting. But we mapped what he's doing. You know, he's out in his car, and he's kind of going, you know, out there in the United States, and if you were just reading these pieces, you wouldn't really necessarily put this together, but one of our political reporters mapped it, and we published the map this morning. It's a pretty straight line from El Paso to Iowa. And, you know, so you get these pieces from New Mexico, and then you get these pieces from the Panhandle, and then a piece from Kansas, and then we mapped this thing, and there, you know, yeah, it's pointed right at Iowa. So I think I know what he's doing. We'll see how this goes. So we may have a couple of Texans in the next presidential race. We have in this last election, Texas became something that it hasn't been in a long time, which is a possible switch state. It's been a red state for a long time. You cannot win in the current political environment a national election as a Republican if you don't have Texas. And everybody's just assumed, you know, with good reason, that Texas was solidly in the red corner. This last election, the Republicans won all of the statewide seats again, but they won them by much smaller margins. And because of Beto O'Rourke and some of these other races, you have people all over the country looking at Texas and saying maybe Democrats could put a dent in this. And I think over the next couple of years, this will affect what the legislature does. It'll affect what the elections do. You'll see people in both parties approaching Texas in a different way. National politics, Texas has been an ATM for the last three decades. They come down here, they get money, they take it to New Hampshire and spend it. And I think, you know, to some extent, they're going to come to Texas, take the money, and spend it in Houston and Dallas. And the Republicans will be trying to shore themselves up. The Democrats will be trying to make a dent. So that's a quick overview of the session that just started and the politics that we're in. And I'll turn it over to Richard.
Thank you. To continue this discussion at a high level before I get down to some details, my paper in the binder is entitled Advancing the Common Good in the Legislative Process, and it asks whether nonprofits have a special role or a special status in public affairs. It's very clear that nonprofits of all kinds are increasingly active in the public forum, lobbying, and in the legislative process. These are charitable organizations, faith-based organizations, state associations, advocacy groups of all kinds, and various quasi-public entities that I've represented over the years.